When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
3, 2, 1, let's go.
What's hot in the strip clubs? Your hosts, the 2016 and 2017 recipients of the Exotic Dancer Publications DJ of the Year Award, Danny Myers and Alon Fong.
Welcome to Behind the Curtain, a What's Hot in the Strip Clubs podcast on the Pantheon Podcast Network. We are found on all streaming platforms, or you can go to our website, www.whatshotitsc.com. I'm your host, Alon Fong. And Behind the Curtain is a peek behind the curtain of the strip club industry as I introduce to you some of the many talented and unique individuals that work in the strip club industry with skills and talents way beyond just being strip club employees. So we're going to get into some of those unique personalities like my guest today. My guest today is Charlie Lee, also known as Charlie Foreplay, his club DJ name. Born originally in Taiwan, he moved to New York City and lived in Queens and then the Bronx starting around age 5. Didn't speak a lick of English back then. Isn't that crazy? Graduated from the prestigious Duke University with a degree in economics and is currently the resident DJ since 2011 of the Downtown Cabaret in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Charlie Lee. Charlie, welcome.
What's up, man?
What's up, brother? Good to see you.
Likewise.
Pleasure having you on. Now, this is really special for me in a number of reasons. So for those of you who know me and don't know my last name, my last name is Fong. I am half Chinese. And Charlie is one of the few Asian DJs I've met in the strip club industry. There's about, I don't know, there's probably 5 to 10 of us that I know of. So you got Cuts up in Las Vegas, you, LaRue Wisner, but both those guys are out of the industry now. I think Dustin Nguyen up in Denver. I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head. There's a few more, but there's not very many of us.
Right.
And so, you know, I find it fascinating. You're a first generation American. So am I, but I was born here. I grew up in Pittsburgh. You grew up in New York City, which is like the mecca of everything American in many ways, right? People really identify with New York City as America, I feel like, outside this country, right? You have the Statue of Liberty. A lot of the immigrant journeys began there, certainly in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, right? So now you got there around age 5, not speaking any English. How did that, do you think that really formulated your persona? I mean, most people I meet from New York have a strong tie to the city, and there's so many musical connections. We'll get into all that, but let's start there.
Moved here when I was right around 5 years old and stuff, you know, and, you know, when you're that young, you don't really know what's going on, right? I just remember, it was just a real stressful time for my folks at the same time, you know, their English are very broken as well. And, you know, we didn't speak a lick of it. So, you know, just getting adjusted those first couple of years was a little challenging for my mom and dad. But as a kid, I didn't really notice any difference, you know, couldn't really talk to the, you know, obviously play and talk with the kids like, you know, everybody else did, but we made it, you know.
Did you find that like isolating for you or like as a kid, or is that, you know, did you tend to just keep to yourself then out of that or?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, when you're that young, you don't really know any different. Right. Mm-hmm. If people were looking at me funny, I didn't realize it. Right. I mean, I'm 1 or 2 years old and I always laugh because, you know, people ask me how I learned English and I'm like hours and hours of Sesame Street. You know what I mean? And I picked it up pretty quickly. As far as it pertains to DJ, it's kind of funny, you know, because I have a lot of friends that are like, you know, do you remember this song? It came out in like the early 80s. And I was like, well, that was before I spoke English. Right. You know,
yeah, I think, for sure.
I remember the first album I ever bought was probably Appetite for Destruction. And that was probably the first album I listened to where I understand all the lyrics, you know. Right. And I understood what they were saying and what they were singing about, you know. But prior to that, I remember buying having like a Def Leppard cassette tape, you know.
Wow.
No idea what they were singing about, you know, no idea what they were saying, but just thought the music was really cool and stuff like that.
I was going to ask you, when did music sort of enter your life and what band or artist made you say, wow, that's it? That's like, that caught your attention.
Man, music entered my life very, very early. when I was probably in second grade, I want to say, and I always remember this pretty vividly. My dad had bought me a little cassette player, mm-hmm. and it was a dual cassette player, which was pretty badass, right?
Yeah.
So at that time, you know, I was listening to the Top 100 Countdown with Casey Kasem, you know, again, understanding little bits of what they were saying, but not all of it, you know. But one of my favorite pastimes was just to sit there and just record songs that I liked off of, you know, the radio and stuff, mm-hmm. you know. So that definitely made a impression on me. And obviously hair bands was, you know, at its peak at that point, right?
Sure.
Early mid 80s or whatnot, and really hitting its stride. And, you know, I was fascinated by that. Like, you know, oh my God, you know, these guys got all the girls and, like, you know,
yeah, right.
Crazy cool what they're doing, you know, like that must be a cool thing. So, you know.
You know, I think, you know, younger people, they don't understand the impact of MTV and that on our generation. Right. So like you said, with the girls and, you know, rock bands at the time were pretty and they sang about partying and sex and cool cars and like the videos were full of hot chicks and all that. And I know me as a half Chinese person trying to fit in, I thought that was the American dream. You know, I wanted to hang out with the hot blonde and
100%,
look,
me too.
And look at the hot end. Look at the industry I ended up in. I ended up in the strip club industry right, for 30 right, years, right?
Right. 100%, man. I totally agree, man. Just seeing all that, the lifestyle, and, you know, it's just a little fantasy world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, growing up, having Asian parents, I mean, you know, the discipline was pretty, it was pretty strict, you know, and, mm-hmm. You know, but that was my escape was music, right?
Right.
That was my free time activity. I just wanted to listen to music and you know, see what was out there and whatnot, you know, and having that cassette player, man, was a game changer, bro.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Did your parents really get your passion for music? It's funny because my dad and I, he was an engineer and Chinese and it was all, you know, school and provide and stability and all that stuff. Right. And it wasn't until much later in life, actually, that he kind of finally understood. It was a little before he passed. He said to me, my biggest regret was if I'd understood how important music was to you, I would have made sure you got, you know, every vocal lesson, every piano lesson. He's like, I just didn't understand. And luckily I did get that closure with him before he passed. But was there a lot of butting heads with your parents on your music journey or did they understand it at all? Or,
you know what, you know, they're obviously well aware that I was into music, you know, I'd be blasting it from my room, you know, even from a very early age. And yeah, I think they got it, you know, like I remember when I was probably junior high or whatnot, for my birthday, my dad actually got me a guitar.
Cool.
And that was cool as hell, right? That was like the best gift ever, you know what I mean? They understood I love music, man. Yeah, it was my escape. Like I said, it was definitely my escape. It was definitely my hobby and full-time hobby. You know, I played drums, I played guitars as early as I could, you know. I was always into the music scene, man. Was always into it. And yeah, I mean, they you know, they tolerated it as long as the grades were there.
Yeah.
So yeah,
for sure.
That was pretty much a trade-off.
What band or artist, what band did you obsess about in those early years? I'm just curious. I know you mentioned Guns N' Roses, but.
Man, like I said, I think the very first cassette tape I ever bought my own money was Def Leppard.
Okay.
And
was it Pyromania or
Hysteria? Okay. Hysteria, without a doubt. I always remember that whole album, front to
phenomenal.
Back. Yeah, I agree, man.
Great record.
You know, I was into even like fringe bands. I love White Lion. Don't fucking laugh.
I love White Lion. Dude, Vito Brado on guitar? Forget about it.
Vito Brado, yeah. It was like, you know, he's like the second coming of Van Halen. So, you know, just all types of weird shit, man. All types of weird shit, dude. I was into it all, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The hair bands were amazing to me.
So quick plug. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I remember when we were younger too, right? You know, you would hear at my age, I remember they were talking about, like, you know, this is a time when Ozzy was super controversial.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was biting bats' heads off and stuff like that. And all my friends at school were like, if you listen to his music, you're going to become a devil worshiper. And I remember, like, thinking all this stuff. And I remember, like, going out and buying Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood.
Yep.
And pressing play on it and going, I don't feel any different. You know, but it was a kick-ass album. You know what
yes,
I mean?
It was. That's a great record, too, by the way. Quick plug. So we just created, Danny and I, and we had a bunch of people vote, created the Strip Club Music Hall of Fame. I don't know if you saw our initial, the voting awesome. Done. Yeah, yeah. So did you hear who the five first ballots were?
I did not, actually.
I don't know if I'm allowed to reveal it yet. So go listen, people. It's on What's Hot. ITSC.com, the Strip Club Music Hall of Fame. You can also check that out at www.stripclubhof.com. You'll see who our inaugural class is of 2023. Many of the bands Mr. Charlie Lee loved and listened to that he just mentioned are on the list. Okay. When did DJing become come in your circle and in your sphere and become relevant? Like, when did that start? Ooh, becoming a,
I definitely remember that very vividly. I remember I had a buddy. We didn't go to the same high school, obviously, but we were good friends. And I remember going to his house one time to borrow an amp that I needed for something. And I remember walking in his room and he had these turntables out and this little mixer set up. And I was like, well, what's that? And he's like, oh, these are turntables, man. I'm learning how to DJ. And I was like, oh, okay, like, well, show me what's going on here. And I remember it was like an old school Gemini mixer with the orange padding and, like, you know, and he's just pretty much mixing the same song, the same record on both sides and just, you know, practicing that way, you know. And it was just showing me how to beat match and things like that. And I was instantly hooked. And this kid came from a pretty wealthy family, you know, mm-hmm. have all those fun toys and whatnot, but he had all the equipment, right? He had all the sound equipment and stuff like that. So I started tagging along with him because he actually got gigs. I mean, you know, he was like, what, 14, 15? And, you know, he was playing house parties and doing little cool little things like that. And his dad was really supportive of it. So I would just tag along to all his gigs, you know? And long story short, I just met a bunch of young DJs at the time mm-hmm. growing up in Queens. And was really lucky too. My neighbors across the street from me in Queens were these two older guys, and they were just cool as fuck, man. Like, they were like my older brothers growing up. And it's a funny story behind that. I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but I remember one time just walking through the neighborhood and hearing somebody playing live drums across the street. And I was like, oh, those must be the new guys that just moved in. And I heard drums and, you know, I didn't think anything of it. For some reason, I just thought automatically, I don't know why, that it was a kid, right?
Okay.
So I ran in my house, grabbed my guitar and my amp, and I walk on over and I knock on the door. Yeah. I open the door and, you know, I think I'm like 13 or 14 at this point. And, you know, this older guy opens the door. He's like, you know, he's like in his 20s and he's like, what do you want? And I was like, well, let's jam. And he's like, okay, come on in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Stranger danger.
Right off the jump, man. I was just, you know, it was really cool to be around those guys. And, you know, they were very musically inclined too. Pat and Mark Evangelista. Shout out to those guys if you guys are listening.
Yeah.
No, they're good guys, man. It's funny because years later, they owned a bar down in Midtown in Manhattan. And during the summers when I come back from school, I would DJ for them.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, just a long, long journey with these guys. I mean, Pat was a drummer. His little brother, Mark, was a bouncer at a couple of nightclubs in Queens, you know. So right off the jump, I was really exposed to people that were in the industry in one way or another. Not necessarily the strip club industry, but musically, you know, musically inclined people. So, yeah.
Did you get to DJ in New York coming up, like in your teenage years and through high school at all? Or?
Yeah, for sure, man. You know, like my buddy who had all that equipment, I would tag along with him. And like I said, I met a bunch of young upcoming DJs in Queens at the time, you know, and I was just fascinated by it, man. They were doing, you know, like 18 and over clubs and mm-hmm. DJing all these parties and whatnot. And I was like, I want to do that, you know, and was able pretty much just to work with these guys and told my dad, hey, I was like, you know, like to DJ on the weekends and whatnot. And I remember him telling me, he said, well, you can DJ on the weekends. If you really love it, though, I have two stipulations. Hit me with it. He says, one, anything that you make from it, you can't keep. You got to give it to me since you are so passionate about this. Let's test that, you know?
Okay.
And I was like, all right. You know, like when you're 15, 16, what do you care, right?
Right.
You know, like, you know, a couple bucks for like, you know, some snacks and shit like that, I'm good. So, you know, I started getting booked doing Sweet 16 parties and high school parties and little things like that. Got a little exposure to it. And like I said, man, just basically hooked on it. Just wanted to play music. I was like, well, you know, the live musician thing, that's cool too. But this is a great second runner up kind of deal. Yeah. This works out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it was definitely something imprinted on me. And plus, I mean, you know, we're talking about the 1990s here, right? in my eyes, probably the greatest decade in music ever, because everything was up and coming at the time, you know, right. Every genre was, right? I remember when I started DJing as a teenager, you know, I was big into hip hop, huge into dancehall reggae. It's random, but you know.
No, dancehall's awesome.
Huge in New York at the time, you know, and of course house music, which is without a doubt my passion these days, you know. So just a lot of exposure to a lot of different types of music at the time, and you know, that really shaped my view.
Well, that's the beauty of New York City, right? It's got a scene for everything. Now, did you know, hip hop, obviously New York sort of dominated early 90s, late 80s hip hop, before the West Coast sort of sprang up, and then the Dirty South, and then house music was sort of blown up in America around then in the early 90s. Did you, were you DJing like open format with the parties, just sort of like top 40 when, you know, kind of give me a little picture of what you were spinning.
You know, what's funny back then is that, it was just what was popping in New York at the time. Exactly what you said, you know, hip hop was huge. Obviously I remember, there was a cruising strip that we would drive up and down. It was just a big hangout spot, Francis Lewis Boulevard. If you grew up in Queens, you know exactly where that was. You would just come with, you know, you just roll down there with your buddies and, you know, just cruise up and down the strip trying to pick up chicks, right?
Yeah.
Chicks would be going back and forth, and you'd be back and forth, and you'd pull somebody over if you saw something you liked. And, you know, the mainstay about the whole cruising strip, though, was the music that was playing out of all the cars.
Right.
Some kids had sound systems in their cars, and you know, I just remember being in front of the Carvel ice cream the first time I ever heard Mobb Deep Shook Ones, and I was just just a badass, like, you know, my buddy had a badass subwoofer in his car and it was just bumping. I was just like, oh wow, this is some dark shit right here, you know. But yeah, I mean, just picking a lot of the music from there, you know, like I said, dancehall was really huge back then, hip-hop was huge, and house. So honestly, you know, back then I don't really think we thought about format that much. It was more just like, you know, what's popping and what'll get the girls dancing, you know.
Amen.
Like that. So
I don't think kids even cruise anymore. They probably don't even know what that is. Did any cool like early celebrity stories you crossed paths with anybody or in the scene, or like hip-hop artists or DJs or anything that ended up blowing up?
Oh man. I got a story with that, dude. So there was this 18 and over club in Queens at the time, and it was called the Underground. It's actually pretty famous, actually. Hot 97 used to broadcast out of there on the weekends. Yeah. Funkmaster Flex would DJ out of that place on the weekends. And this club was probably 2-3 miles from my house. It was on Bell Boulevard, you know? And I remember one time my buddy Tom was DJing one of the 18 and over nights. And that night, I mean, you gotta understand, this isn't like the middle of Queens, New York, right? It's in Bayside, Queens, to be specific, you know? Largely Caucasian neighborhood, right?
Okay.
And I remember they were like, yeah, there's this group calling coming here tonight to perform live. They're called the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, shit. And
nobody knew who they were. I had no clue who they were. I was like, oh, okay. And I remember they gave us like black and white photos, like promo pics from them. And they were all signed from Wu-Tang Clan. I just remember getting one of them going, whatever. Right? And it was the coolest picture too when I think back about it. It was like the Wu-Tang Clan under the Queensboro Bridge. And,
wow. You
know, yeah, and it was signed by all of them, you know. And I remember, you know, they show up at midnight. And like I said, nobody knew who they were.
Right.
You know? And we're talking about predominantly white neighborhood. And all of a sudden, coming down the stairs are like 8 or 8 to 10 black guys. And everyone's like, what the hell is going on here? You know? And a long story short, it was Wu-Tang Clan, but nobody knew who they were. So they were like giving them the business at the door. Like, you know, what are you guys doing here? You know,
right.
Let me see some IDs, and you know, reek of weed smoke, and you know, and I just remember like ODB. I totally remember this. I was like, I had no idea who he was at the time,
right.
But I just remember being at the door and like, you know, like one of the bouncers would give him a hard time about how he's dressed and whatnot. And he's just like, yo, get this crazy white boy off of me. You know? And yeah, you know, obviously we all know what happened with Wu-Tang. I mean, nobody knew who they were that night, obviously, but about 2-3 weeks later, Protect Your Neck came out, and they blew the fuck up, man. And that's my close encounter story.
That's awesome. And now everybody was there that night, right? In the stories. Oh, I was there that night when they played.
Oh, 100%, yeah. And of course, like a dum-dum, I was really careless with the signed picture. Promo pic that I got from them. So yeah, still to this day, I think about it.
Could have sold it on eBay for $100,000.
Right. Oh, man.
Well, they are playing the Ohio State Fair this summer to show you how things come full circle. They are. Wu-Tang! RZA and the crew. All right. So we kind of get through your DJing period here. When did you enter the strip club industry? How did that happen?
Oh, man. So, when I went to college, you know, I remember
Dukies, having Blue Devils.
Duke. That's right. ACC champs, by the way.
Yes. As usual, most of the time.
You know, I DJed all throughout college too, right?
Okay.
I figured out when I first got to college, I was like, I really don't have time for a work study job. And, you know, I remember freshman year, we had a dorm, you know, social coming up and they were trying to figure out entertainment for them. And I was like, I'll DJ if you want, you know? And I remember, just, you know, going out and renting a mixer and, you know, college student at the time and didn't have a lot of money. So I remember borrowing two tape decks from some hall roommates, you know, some hallmates in my dorm, and DJing the thing with cassette tapes.
Cassettes, damn!
Funny as that sounds, right? So going back to my whole thing about recording songs off the radio.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was my first gig ever. I didn't have a lot of money to put into it, and didn't really have all my music down there, so I used cassette tapes. And it was just funny, because towards the end of songs, the radio call would come, this is Z100, and I'd be like, buzz, mix over. So, yeah, that was my first gig ever, you know. But
that's cool. Yeah. In college, how was Duke for you, man? I mean, that's I would imagine a well-off white based crew in the Carolinas, North Carolina.
Oh,
yeah. You're an Asian guy from New York. How did that feel coming from New York City to go down to Chapel Hill, right?
Durham, North Carolina.
Durham, yeah. Sorry, Chapel Hill's the enemy.
Exactly. Sorry. Very close by though. So man, it was different, man. It was definitely culture shock. You know, you grow up in New York, and I really didn't leave New York, you know, from the time I moved there. So didn't really know much about anything that was outside of New York, to be quite honest with you. And I just remember, I'll always remember this. I was my freshman year. I think it was like the first or second week we were there. And a bunch of my roommates and a bunch of dorm mates were like, let's go over to the West Campus and see what the frat parties are about. Mm-hmm. So I remember getting on a bus, the campus bus, and headed over to the West Campus. And at the time, the Roots were playing a concert.
Nice.
On the campus that night.
Yeah.
And I just remember walking by a bunch of white frat boys. And they were like, you guys freshmen? And we're like, yeah. And they're like, all right, just be careful. A lot of monkeys around here tonight. And my jaw dropped to the floor.
Oh, shit.
New York, right? Like, you don't really, it's a melting pot, right? All different nationalities, races,
right?
You know, religions out there. And, you know, I was like, did he really just fucking say that?
Wow.
So, yeah, definitely a little bit of culture shock. But my college friends and I, we were like a Benetton commercial, really. Two Indian guys, an Italian guy. And, you know, so we're just kind of like, wow, we're definitely in a different place now.
Welcome to the South.
Right, pretty much, man.
That's pretty crazy. So you graduate from college, graduate from Duke, get your degree in economics, and you ended up going, what, moving out to Vegas or California?
Yeah, well, when I graduated college, I was working on a startup company. I really thought that was what I was going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So graduated college, again, right off the jump, had a job with this company and trying to make that work. It didn't pan out, and one of my best friends from Duke was already living out in Las Vegas. So he's like, hey, if you got no plans, come out here and, you know, just move out here with me, man. You know, just hang out for a little bit. It's Las Vegas. It'll be fun. And he did that on the promise of getting me a job, an interview at one of the casinos out there. And I was like, hey, well, yeah, that sounds interesting. Let me try and see if I can do that, you know. So moved out to Vegas, interviewed with this company, and what they offered me didn't sound appealing at the time, you know? So in my head, I'm like, well, you know what? I'll just DJ for a little bit and then I can figure out what I want to do. And my buddy, my roommate was like, you know, there's this club, it's a strip club. And, you know, I know you don't do strip clubs, but, you know, I heard they make pretty decent money over there. So long story short, I went in there, auditioned for a day shift position and got it. And that club turned out to be the Spearmint Rhino in Las Vegas. And that's where I started.
It's crazy we didn't cross paths, because I was at Club Paradise in 99 and 2000. And we actually, me and my buddy Woody Hollywood, went to the grand opening party at Spearmint Rhino, because it was before it was that mega, it was in that strip mall, but it hadn't taken over the whole thing yet.
Oh, it was
really small. And then Like we were there with Penn and Teller or whoever the tall one was. We were kind of standing next to him. But I think Penn's the big guy, right? He got mad because I told him that. I go, are you Penn or Teller? He's like, what the fuck? I'm like, I don't know, dude. I just know the name. I know you're one of them. and some porn stars at the time.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But none of the mega clubs had opened up yet. So Sapphires wasn't there. Like Club Paradise was the top club and then kind of the new club. And we were crossing the Hard Rock. There was no Palms yet. Like, you know what I mean? So like the Vegas of now that people say was just sort of starting with the mega clubs and the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, without a doubt. I remember very distinctly about Las Vegas at the time. Yeah, you're right. Club Paradise was the top of the food chain. I would say Crazy Horse was up there as well. Mm-hmm. Crazy Horse too. I remember going to Club Paradise too. And I was like, man, these guys are fancy here. Cause you guys have the whole gown thing going. You'd have these like feature acts, you know, on the weekends and whatnot. And I just remember thinking, wow, this is pretty high level stuff. You know,
we had our own showgirls. We didn't do features. It was our in-house. They were Vegas showgirls. Right.
I remember that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That was cool. It was dope.
I knew a lot of girls that were part of those shows, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was smart enough, the Rhino at the time wasn't much. What people have to remember about Vegas at this time is there were no clubs, right? There were maybe two nightclubs in the entire city. There
Body was English?
Yeah. No,
it wasn't even open yet.
Yeah, 2000, that was like, no, yeah. Oh, it was like Club Utopia and at Luxor, you know?
And the Beach Club.
And the Beach Club, right? Exactly. You know? So it's like if you wanted to do something outside of gambling at casinos at night, strip clubs was Las Vegas nightlife, right? You go to the strip clubs, and then the strip clubs ruled the day back then. But that being said, the Rhino wasn't really anything like it is today.
Right.
It was just getting started out, you know. And I remember getting there, like, you know, at the time, having like 50, 60 girls was really good. Mm-hmm. Within a year of me getting there, I mean, we started doubling that number. And then started doing the after hours. And that's really what put us on the map, you know.
Right.
So we went from like having 60, 70 girls on the weekends to like 140, like almost overnight.
Yeah.
Started that thing. And then, you know, from that point on, you know, all the girls started migrating from the other clubs. And we took quite a few girls from Club Paradise.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, I know a lot of our girls migrated eventually.
Speedas and, you know, and just started that momentum going, you know. Pretty soon we were running like 200 to 300 girls on the weekend.
Yeah, it was a monster. You guys were a monster.
For sure, man. But I'll start with that after hours, man.
Okay.
You know, that's definitely what made us different. I remember there would be a line out the door at like 9 in the morning, like blazing desert sun out, but a line wrapped around the building at 9 in the morning, you know, people trying to get in.
I remember getting in, and luckily we knew a few people, so we would get in. We'd go in after work at late, like you said, late. Did you know Alan Chang and those guys when they were there?
That doesn't sound familiar, but
okay, because he ended up now he created the Peppermint Hippo, so he was a bouncer in Vegas or a VIP host there. And he, anyways, just out of curiosity, I thought, you know, did you have any interesting experiences? I know as a half Chinese guy, I don't look Chinese, so I always felt like I can kind of peek behind the curtain of things because I look very white, right? Sure. And I know I've run into no like outright direct racism towards me, but people would definitely drop. I remember I had one manager at a club I worked at, and he was saying chink this, chink that. And I'm kind of like, hey, watch what you say. And he's like, well, what the fuck you care? I'm like, because I'm Chinese. He's like, ha, 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 very funny. I go, my last name is Fong. I'm being very fucking serious right now. Say it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and, you know, luckily I didn't really encounter a lot of that, you know. Rewind a little bit. When I remember I getting to college and – you know, we're in North Carolina for crying out loud. And all my friends were like, oh my God, there's this Asian guy and he's got the thickest New York accent. Because my accent was super thick back then, right? Used to talk like this.
No way.
You know, love chocolate, hang out with your daughter. You know? I just grew up in Queens, just, you know, had this super strong accent. And
fucking no, get out of here. Forget about it.
I was made fun of mercilessly in college. But yeah, you know, moving to Vegas, it was man. I didn't really encounter a lot of that, to be honest with you, you know, luckily. But you know, definitely a culture shock again, right?
Yeah.
Going from like an Ivy League prep heaven to like Ripperland Vegas.
Like, you know? No shit. That's true. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, you know, so it was just like it was just party on at that point, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So one of the things we like to do is kind of for our non-strip club audience and listeners, we like to explain some differences or some things about the industry. So if you would, could you kind of maybe clarify the difference between normal club DJing and strip club DJing? What are some of the big differences that you have to navigate?
Yeah, you know, so normal nightclub DJing, your responsibility is to keep people dancing, right? And you have to keep that energy up on the floor. In a lot of ways, you know, it's all about building energy, whether you're talking about strip club DJing or nightclub DJing. But I think with strip club DJing, there's a much bigger aspect of organizing to it than there is with nightclub DJing. You know, nightclub DJing, you're primarily worried about music and making the right selections to keep that floor going, to keep people dancing so they buy drinks. And, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, with strip club DJing, it's like there's a whole element of organizing, you know, and that's organizing your rotation. And it's almost like, you know, if nightclub DJing was juggling with three balls, right? Strip club DJing is like juggling with five, right?
With chainsaws.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. It's a little different, you know. Not much emphasis on like transitions and stuff like that with strip club DJing, but much more, like I said, organizing your rotation list, you know, and adjusting on the fly as needed so that you could keep up the energy, but still have an organized show.
So for sure, running the stage rotation is what he means when he says rotation. And how did you have any problems adding the emceeing part? Were you pretty comfortable with talking on the mic? Because you don't have to do that as much as a club DJ, right?
Oh, man, that was definitely different for me because coming into Las Vegas, I didn't have much experience emceeing, you know. And I remember my audition. I mean, I remember I just downed two shots really quick at the bar and jumped into it, you know, and nailed it. But, yeah, it was definitely an adjustment starting off, right? So nobody really – I mean, this is like – we're talking about 2000 here that I started, you know. And nobody really trained to, right? They just kind of throw you the wolves. They're like, you got your own music? You're like, yeah. You know, like, well, there you go. You know, just figure it out. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of preferred it that way, right?
Yeah.
Like, you either sink or swim, right? So,
yeah.
You know, you just thrown right into it. But it definitely took me a while to find my voice because I remember the guy that I worked under at the time had the strippical, like, pukey voice.
The strippical puke voice. Yeah, puke voice. You know, tell people what puke voice is for the non-strip.
Hey, voices. Fellas, welcome out to the Spirit Rhino. And this is this is Chastity with her first song. There's some really like, you know, just some real showmanship behind it, you know, and I get it. But I remember trying to mimic him at the time. And I'm like, I sound so stupid, like trying to take this voice on, you know? And it definitely took a year or so before I found what worked for me. Just put it that way.
I would love to be the guy who hears your voice doing the puke voice on the mic. You know, he's at the club and he hears, hey, Chastity. And then he goes up to meet the DJ and there's this little short Asian guy who sounds like he's like, you know, Wolfman Jack.
Oh, man, I got that a lot, you know. But I think I still had a twinge of my New York accent, so they're even more shocked to figure out. Short Asian guy, you know.
We're talking like this.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, also about one of the things I've noticed different, and I only learned club DJing late in my career, but I know one of the things I really had to learn as I learned to, I say, really DJ, is you have to know the songs inside and out, like verse, chorus, all the breakdown parts, because you got to figure out when you're going to mix in and, you know, where you're going to beat match. Are you just going to drop it in? Are you going to echo out? These are all DJ terms and mixing techniques. But where the strip club DJ, and the other thing is with club DJing, you only play songs short snippets essentially, whereas we're stuck in a strip club, you play the full three minute songs roughly. So talk a little bit about that difference of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, back then, I don't think there was, you know, back then there wasn't all right, just put it this way. I would say I would probably have noticed in the last 10 to 15 years or so where people's attention spans have completely been reduced to, like, you know, what, you know, if a song ran for like 3 minutes, it would help hold your interest for the most part. But in the last 10, 15 years, if you're DJing a nightclub and a dance floor, you play a song longer than a minute and a half, two at max, people, you're losing their attention right off the jump. You know, they kind of want that hit every, you know, that hit of dopamine every minute and a half or so, right? So there's these crazy transitions involved with it. You know, at a strip club, it's a little different. Luckily, you know, your music isn't the main show. The girl is, right? The girls are.
Right.
So in a way, people don't notice as much that you're playing a full 3 minute song. So I guess that would be the biggest difference I could see, right? Absolutely. With nightclub DJing, you know, like these days, especially if you're playing mixed format, you kind of have to slam it, right?
Right.
And like I said earlier, you know, when you're DJing a nightclub, your primary focus is to keep that dance floor going. So yeah, very, very different for sure. You know, with strip club DJ, I almost feel like it, you know, with given the parameters, it's a little difficult sometimes. You know, one of the biggest complaints I see these days amongst DJs in our industry is, you know, how short the songs are now. Mm-hmm. But it all has to do with the new technology, right? So In order to get better streams or more streams, artists are almost encouraged in a way to have shorter songs, like 2 minute songs that are, you know, that people want to play over and over again. So yeah, definitely an adjustment, man, without a doubt.
And it's going to get worse. I don't know if you saw this, but Spotify has a new buy-in system for the labels and whatnot. So it's kind of, Spotify is becoming pay to play essentially. So we'll see. And even some congressmen, I just read something about this. I don't know enough to really go into it, but essentially Spotify is having a new component where you can pay 25% higher fees as a record label to get the algorithms to favor your music to get seen more. So, Congress already is like, hold on. So we'll see what happens with that. We're going to have more in a second. We'll have more with Charlie Foreplay, AKA Charlie Lee, right after this.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
All right, we are back with Charlie Lee, a.k.a. Charlie Foreplay, on Behind the Curtain, a What's Hot into Strip Clubs podcast on the Pantheon Podcast Network. You can find us on all major streaming platforms or go to our website, www.whatshotitsc.com. Back here with Charlie Lee, the resident DJ at Downtown Cabaret in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Phenomenal DJ. He can DJ all styles, hip-hop, EDM, house music, open format. Great guy. I'm super excited to have him on the show. We've been talking about DJing and the strip club community and how he came up through the industry. So we're going to go a little bit deeper with Charlie now. What would be your dream set list? So like if you didn't have to be a club DJ, you were an artist and people were paying to see Charlie, just you, Charlie Foreplay, what would be your dream set list to play?
Oh man, that's easy. I love house music, man. I grew up on house music. That's always been my thing. Been really, really lucky to have met a lot of the DJs along the way that kind of fostered that passion for the song, you know, music, that genre. Been good friends with some really good DJs, man. Some really amazing, talented DJs. You know, one of my buddies who I met in Las Vegas, Jameson. Shout out to my boy Jameson. He moved to the UK to run the Spearman Rhinos in the UK, and he's been a big influence on my life. Just the exposure to music from him, you know. I remember in the early 2010s, you know, at the time EDM was coming into its own, right? And to me, EDM is really, really different from house music, right?
Yeah.
EDM is really, you know, the time, the the type of EDM at that time that was becoming popular. It was being fused with hip hop, you know. So that was the time when David Guetta was doing mixes with Usher and Nicki Minaj, and everybody was kind of jumping on that train, you know. And I just remember feeling so disillusioned with it, right? I mean, like, it popped, right? You knew it was popular, close, but it's just not the house music that I grew up with, right? I grew up on like Danny Tenaglia and you know, Junior Sanchez, you know, just some of the darker New York house stuff, you know, and was always about that kind of house. And I felt like that EDM was kind of bastardizing that for me, you know? So I just remember reconnecting with my buddy Jameson at the time, who I hadn't seen in a minute. I remember he's like, man, I'm going to Miami for Ultra, you know, you should come meet up with me. I was like, all right, cool. And we get to Miami and I'm like, so we going to Ultra? He's like, fuck no. Like, I'm gonna take you to see some of the underground artists, you know.
Oh,
like,
very cool.
That I started following from you know, from my time in the UK. And I mean, that was just an epiphany for me, just to hear some of the newer stuff. You know, at the time they labeled it deep house.
Yeah.
In my head though, I'm like, this is just the house music that I grew up with, you know. Right. It's a little darker, it's you know, it's deeper and it's got a little bit more feel than than bubblegum stuff, you know. So I love house music, man, you know. And coincidentally, at my club, pretty soon in the next 2 months or so, we're gonna run a new promotion. We're gonna do an all house music night,
and awesome. It's gonna be called
House Call Mondays. And awesome. Yeah, so I get to play like a 3 hour set of just shit out.
Hell yeah, I'm excited for you, man. Same. Who are some of those guys you're talking about? Who are your influences, like DJs,
well, at the time, man, when I took that trip to Miami with Jameson, that was the start of many trips, actually. So the last decade, you know, we've gone to Ibiza. I've heard him. Yeah, Jameson is actually a resident DJ at Ministry of Sound in the UK.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, which is like house mecca, right?
Bucket list. That's bucket list. That and Ibiza are on my bucket list. So
yeah, no, it was sick, man. But we started going to these festivals. I mean, we just get together and we just go to cool ass festivals and concerts, man. I remember going to the Defected festival in Croatia a couple of years ago, you know, and just hearing some just amazing DJs. I mean, I love Solomon and Tale of Us. I mean, there's just too many groups to really name, but man, I love progressive house. I love tech house. I love all that stuff, man.
You turned me on. So I got to keep reminding myself to follow up with you, because I did ask you for some underground stuff and you sent me like Greco and I forget who else now, but the stuff I ended up playing in my club that some of my girls really dug.
That's dope.
You're always on top of the underground stuff before I am. So I got to remember to keep harassing you for tips on that stuff. Sure. Would you ever want to be a touring artist? Have you produced your own stuff? I know you've done mix shows and stuff, but
no, I really haven't dabbled in the production side that much. I mean, I can make simple remixes, but nothing crazy. Not like on a level of like a Mike D or anything like that, you know. Okay. But yeah, I mean, touring. I don't know, man. It's kind of ironic, you know. I figured out through the years that I'm really more of an introvert than anything. You know? So, and, you know, it's funny, you know, coincidentally, we're talking about this new promotion that we got coming up, you know. My booth mate is like, man, we're going to move the DJ booth out to the one of the stages, you know, so it actually looks like a real DJ concert, you know.
Shit.
And I'm sitting here going, oh, man.
Oh.
You're in the spotlight, like, oh, man.
Charlie.
It's so old school, right? Like, you know, like, if you think about it, right? Back in the day, if you wanted to go hear a DJ spin somewhere, right? You'd be like, okay, he's playing at this nightclub. Club. Let's go over there and dance our asses off, right?
Right.
And you didn't give a shit what the DJ was doing, right? Like, he was in a dark corner somewhere. You didn't even see him, right? You just enjoyed the music and, you know, enjoyed the energy on the floor and you did your thing. And nowadays, like I said, in probably the last 10, 15 years, all of a sudden the DJ is now, it's a concert now.
A star, yeah.
Yeah, and he's actually under the spotlights on the stage, and it's so like,
weird.
It's super weird, because like, if you ask most DJs, right, I would say like a tiny fraction of them really do some crazy phenomenal stuff with mixing, right?
Yeah, like James
Hype, you know.
Yeah,
he's an anomaly though.
Yeah, of course,
an anomaly, you know. Most of us are just fucking transitioning from one plus, you know, one track to another, and you know, maybe throwing an effect or two, you know, to make it sound smooth or a little more polished up, but you know, we're not doing anything special, man. We're playing records.
Yeah.
And I was joking around with my buddy. I was like, I gotta start practicing my fist pumping, right? Exactly, man.
It's Jesus Christ pose.
Oh man, you got to strike that pose at some point, and you know all that stuff, and it's just funny to me, man. You know, I'm definitely going to be out of my element with that. That's for sure, man.
It's weird when you go to a show to see a DJ because it is a show now, like you said. And like, I come from rock. I was a rock singer. I fronted a band, right? And you know, you're shaking your ass and jumping around. And you know, I came from the David Lee Roth School of Show, so doing kicks and splits and all that stuff. And but a DJ can't do that because you're tied to the board. You got, you know, you can't run around. You're not a singer, so you, it's hard. You know, it's hard to even interact with the crowd. It's so weird to me. I've gone to some shows at clubs, and sure. You're right, man. I miss the dance floor. People barely dance anymore.
Right. No, no doubt.
It's so weird.
Somewhere along the line, they figured out. You know, I remember back in the day, dance floor used to be this big, right? And you know, the bar would be on the side in case you got
Right.
thirsty. And then somewhere through the years, somebody figured out, hey, I could sell a $30 bottle of booze for like 400, and all of a sudden the floor shrank to
Bottles
this
are
big, and you know, everything was seating now. You know,
yep. Now they dance in their booths.
yeah, exactly. And that was definitely a big change and transition in the way nightclubs, you know, came up. But that also coincided with the popularity of nightclubs. You know, these mega
Yeah.
clubs that came to be, right? Once Vegas realized how lucrative it could be, that's when it all took off. You know,
Last I
it's like,
heard, Hakkasan was like 15 grand a table now. Something
that
like
sounds
that.
about right. I
Coming
mean,
out of COVID.
even the most ridiculous things like bottle presentations, right? In
Yeah. Oh my
Vegas, there's a
God.
whole menu for that. Just for that alone, you could
Yeah.
have a themed bottle presentation. You could have a Superman themed one. You could have a Pokemon themed one that you could
Isn't that
buy. You
nuts?
know,
Even
so
at the strip clubs.
yeah, right.
Hey, so real quick on the artist tip, who would be your dream artist to open for or tour with or spin with, play with?
Ooh.
You could DJ with anybody.
Right now, at this moment, obviously, I think the my two favorite acts right now have got to be John Summit or Vintage Culture.
All right, I
Those
like
guys
those
are
guys.
huge right now, and
Yeah.
yeah, no, I really dig a lot of the stuff they've been putting out the last couple of years. No
Good
doubt, man.
call, good pick. So what's next for Charlie? What's next for Charlie Foreplay, for in fact? So what's next for Charlie, the strip club DJ? And then are there any plans for Charlie Foreplay, your club DJ persona?
I'll tell you what, man, I'm lucky enough to have worked at to work at a club that kind of fosters both of those passions, to be honest with you. You
That's
know,
awesome.
I've been at the Downtown Cabaret for it'll be 12 years this coming October, and that's the longest I've ever been at any gig, and this is without a doubt the best job I've ha had in this industry by far. I work with some of my best friends.
That's awesome.
My work family is literally my family. You know, it's my support system. It's just, I work with some really amazing people in my club. And
Wow.
yeah, so definitely a lot of outlets to let that creativity flow. This house call party, you know, it was my idea. I was like, I really want to do this, and everybody just got behind it. And
Oh,
now
yeah.
it's gonna be something that we're planning towards. Probably gonna roll out in the next few months here. So
Do you have a date
really
yet
happy
for
with
it?
that. Not yet. Coincidentally, our club is about to get a whole new light system put in. So we're talking about, yeah, we've been operating the last 6, 7 years under the original light setup that had been put in a few years back. And yeah, we're gonna get the whole thing replaced. So we're
Awesome.
trying to make the new promotion coincide with the rolling out of this. So yeah, pretty excited about that, man.
Well, let me know when you have a date. I will come up for that without a doubt, man. To see you and hear you spin house,
For
I'm all
sure.
about it.
Oh,
That
that'd
would
be
be
dope,
dope.
man. That'd be really dope. Yeah,
That'd be
it's gonna
dope.
be one Monday a month. It's either gonna be the first Monday every month or the last Monday. We haven't figured it out yet,
All
but
right.
yeah,
All
that's
right.
something we're really excited for.
Give a shout out to your booth mates. Who are your DJs up there with you?
Man, I work with the best, like the best. I'm lucky enough to have had a crew that's been together almost 10 years now, you know.
Wow.
So lots of consistency. Man, it's just the best guys, man. I can never have this conversation without mentioning Owen. Owen Contreras, love
Yeah.
that kid. This kid's a prodigy. I mean, you're talking about one of the most unique people I've ever met in my life, much less DJ, right?
Okay.
But as a DJ, this kid's phenomenal. I mean, he knows everything about every type of software, lighting, or audio related. Just a super smart kid, man. Super creative, and this kid's a legend too. Like, he's been throwing theme parties and crazy parties since he was in high school. I hear
That's
all these
awesome.
stories about him in Minneapolis, you know.
Wow.
I remember hearing a story about him recreating that scene from Blade when he walks into the nightclub at
Yes.
one of his house parties, you know. And I guess this kid threw a party with complete with like red paint and like fake
That's
blood and all
awesome.
this stuff. And yeah,
Best
no,
scene ever.
owns the shit, man. And then my buddy Mike, we affectionately call Rappy. He's our day guy. Super cool kid, man. Just the most reliable, nicest, down-to-earth dude ever. I'm just really lucky to have a good crew, man.
What's really Mike's last name?
It's Mike K, but you know, we all call him Rappy, and the reason we call him Rappy is because he can actually rap.
I mean, ah.
You can like point at your phone and they, you know, say, Mike, make a rap about this, and he would just freestyle that. So yeah.
That's awesome. Yep. Shout out to the Downtown Cabaret DJ crew, man. They sound like awesome guys. I know Owen a little bit from the Panda Group, but I haven't really interacted with him. I'm going to have to reach out to him. All right, you ready to have some fun, Charlie?
Oh.
You ready?
Let's go. What's up?
All right, man. It's time for the questions as made famous by Bernard Pivot and James Lipton on Inside the Actor Studio. Charlie Lee, you are on the hot seat. Here we go. 10 questions. What is your favorite word?
Ooh. I don't know. Being from New York, I'd probably say dope.
Dope. All right.
1,000 times a day. So yeah, that would be it.
What is your least favorite word?
Ooh. I don't know. It's a tough one, man. Tough one. I can't think of anything off the bat.
Something that comes to mind. First one pops in your head.
Bitch. I don't know.
Bitch. All right. That'll work. Charlie Lee, what turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Hearing an amazing DJ at a club in a setting that most people wouldn't get to see it.
You just made me jealous. Charlie Lee, what turns you off?
Oh man, arrogant people, name droppers, those are the worst. Those are the absolute worst. The absolute worst.
All right, here's everyone's favorite question. What is your favorite curse word?
Oh fuck. By a million miles.
So far, I think that's been the only answer I've gotten since I've done this. What sound or noise do you love?
Sub bass. Subwoofer bass.
Vibrate, baby. What sound or noise do you hate?
Oh, man. People complaining? I guess. I don't know.
Hell yeah. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Man, I've always thought that, you know, if I was a computer programmer, that would never run out of work, especially in this day and age. So a coder.
Okay, a coder. What profession would you not like to do under any circumstance?
Probably be a banker, which is what the original plan was.
Oops. Yeah. All right. Charlie, here's the modified one, the big one. If heaven exists, what musician or musicians would you most like to jam with in heaven?
Oof. Man. You know, you just get this flood of like a long list in your head and you can't think of a single one. Man, I don't know. I'd have to say Prince.
There you go.
He just had such a, you know, wide array of tastes and like ranges, you know, like amazing guitarist, amazing pop singer. I mean, it wasn't anything that guy couldn't do. So
absolutely. Charlie Lee, you are off the hot seat. Thank you for joining me. It's been a blast. Any social medias or websites you want to shout out or to the people?
You can follow me on SoundCloud, Charlie Foreplay, or follow me on Mixcloud /Charlie Foreplay.
And go see him at Downtown Cabaret in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's a beautiful club, I got to tell you, and they treat everyone world-class there. I've been there, and it's a great club for sure. Thanks for being on the show, man. It's been fun.
Absolute pleasure, man. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to What's Hot in the Strip Clubs with Danny Myers and Alon Fong, presented by Panda and Strip Joints Music. You can find us on all major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.